This is a podcast from WOR. Don't rush through lunch. Take 2 hours and spend it with a friend.
I really enjoy your show. One of the high points of my day, truly.
Welcome to the Joan Hamburg Show. Joan is New York Radio's first lady. She's got a menu for every appetite. News you can use. The biggest celebrity guests. Today's top headlines.
They disapprove of government taking over in a crisis, and you and I can understand that.
And more. Pull up a chair and enjoy. Now, here's Joan Hamburg.
With all these holidays, all these recipes, everyone is still looking for great ideas. Now, Hanukkah on its way. All the different holidays are coming at the same time this year. You've met Tori Avery, called the Shiksa in the Kitchen. And as Tori says, she's a culinary anthropologist, a convert to Judaism, and she's the chef in her family. And she's got great recipes. You've got to go to her website. You'll find out a lot of things. In fact, you may have seen her on Weekend Today. The other day, where she was making her cupcake menorah. I like that. And I bet the kids love that, too.
Oh, yeah. It's a great project for families for the holidays.
How do you do that?
Well, it's really actually pretty simple. You're going to make a menorah out of cupcakes. And I like to make them with my cupcake recipe, which is on my website. It's a coconut chocolate chip cupcake with a coconut buttercream frosting.
Very yummy.
It's decadent. And you just basically, it's real simple. You get some little olive cans, and you cover them with cardstock, blue cardstock and glitter. And then on my website, there are printable cupcake wrappers that you can print out right on your computer and just cut them out and wrap up the cupcakes in these beautiful decorative cupcake wrappers. And then you put a cupcake on top of each of the little olive can stands that you've made. It's a very affordable project. It's very simple. And there are step-by-step instructions on my website.
So you can put it together. Now, you know, as we come up to Hanukkah, and many families are intermarried today, and like you, Tori, you actually converted to Judaism.
Yes, I did.
But people still like to observe, as I say, because our family has intermarried too, we sort of observe everyone's tradition with respect.
Oh, yeah. I think that's so wonderful. I mean, there's such a variety of traditions to celebrate at this time of year, and I think we should all celebrate the wonderful things in all of our traditions. So,
but, you know, and you can go on to Tori's website. When I was a kid, I used to love cheese pancakes. I haven't had them, I'm not even going to tell you how many years, since I was a child. And here I find in the Shiksa.com your cheese latkes, cheese pancakes.
That's
and
right.
You use whole milk ricotta cheese. I'm making this recipe.
Oh, it's so delicious, Joan. You would love it. It's actually based on history, believe it or not.
Tell me.
Well, the Book of Judith has been associated with Hanukkah since the Middle Ages. And this story is basically about a woman named Judith, she's a celebrated Jewish heroine, and she saved her village from an invading Assyrian army. And she was a beautiful widow, and she took it upon herself to save her village. So she tempted the Assyrian army general Holofernes with wine and salty cheese. So the salty cheese made him thirsty, which made him drink more wine, and eventually he passed out drunk. So she beheaded him, and the Israelites were able to launch a surprise attack, and they were victorious because of Judith. So we eat dairy foods around Hanukkah to celebrate Judith's story, and one of these things that I've created, these recipes, is cheese latkes, which work so great for the story of Judith, and they're also more traditional than potato latkes, believe it or not.
No, I never knew that, and
yeah.
They are, you know, seriously, since I was a wee child, I haven't had them, but I still remember the deliciousness, and they were served with, I think, sour cream and jam.
Yeah, oh, they're so good with that. Or if you want to lighten it up, you can use a Greek yogurt with it.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, but actually the first latkes in Italy were made with cheese, so this is actually a very traditional thing you can make, and it's super simple, and like you said, they're just delicious.
Now, if I noticed noticed that you, it's ricotta and it's a little flour and some eggs and sugar, mm-hmm. salt, baking powder, and that's it. But can you do it in a blender? Can you do it by hand, or you really need the Cuisinart?
Oh, no, you can do it in a blender. You could do it by hand. It just makes it a little bit easier if you mm-hmm. throw it in the blender. But, yeah, absolutely, you can do it by hand.
Okay, and then you just do them in a little tiny oil, right?
Yeah, it just takes nonstick cooking spray, which is kind of nice because, you know, during Hanukkah, we're deep frying so many things that by the end of the holiday, I start feeling a little bit heavy. So.
Right, so, but then where did potato pancakes come in, which I now see a lot of stores are carrying them for Jews and non-Jews to try?
Well, we all love potato latkes. I mean, they're my favorite. They're the best. And they are an Eastern European invention, so they came here to America with Eastern European Jewish immigrants. And they're basically just, you know, grated potatoes and onions and sometimes some matzah meal. I actually don't put matzah meal in my latkes. I keep them gluten-free. It makes them fry up a little bit crispier and a little bit less heavy.
So you don't really need any flour, any matzah meal, anything. You just need your potatoes, your onions, your eggs, and a little salt and pepper.
With my recipe, yes, that's how I do it. That's not how everybody does it. Mm-hmm. It's just how I do it. And I actually like to make them bite-sized. I make them small because they tend to fry up a little bit crisper and a little bit faster. And they're bite-sized, which is always fun for the holidays.
But, and everyone should try them. Potato pancakes are truly delicious. The only thing that I still remember, you know, you'd sit at the table and someone would be making them and running out and bringing them. This is hard to make in advance, no? Or do you make them in advance and reheat them in a hot oven?
Well, it is hard to make in advance. They always taste better fresh out of the frying pan, let's be honest. But sometimes mm-hmm. it's just unreasonable to, you know, expect ourselves to have all of these things fried and fresh and ready to go. So sometimes we have to make them in advance, particularly for large parties of people. So I actually got a great tip from a friend of mine who once catered the Oscars. I mean, she's a great chef, and she would make latkes for 5,000 people sometimes for these huge events. And what she would do is reheat them in a convection oven. She said that reheating them in the convection oven.
I wonder why.
I guess it makes them crisper. I don't know. The heat is circulating.
Well, it's more intense a little bit.
Something like that. I don't know. But she said it works great. So I haven't tried it yet, but I thought it was a great tip.
Yeah. No, it sounds good. And who doesn't love potato pancakes? Everyone. They're so delicious. So do you do a Hanukkah party?
I do. This year I'm actually out of town, so I'm probably going to be attending a few Hanukkah uh-huh. parties. But when I'm home, I host, you know, there's 8 nights, so you can do something every night. You can do something a few nights. So a few nights we just hang out with the family. But then, you know, for a couple of the nights we bring some friends over and share the traditions with them.
That's right. And what do you do as a main course?
Oh, it depends. You know, like I said, it's a dairy holiday, but not mm-hmm. always dairy. So, you know, one night you can do dairy, one night you can do meat. So sometimes I serve brisket, and sometimes I serve dairy. And actually what I did last year, which was so delicious, I did vegetable moussaka.
Sounds so good.
Oh, yeah. It was a really great main course. I mean, it was a big hit. Everybody loved it.
And it's on your website. But what is the base of that?
Well, it's pretty simple. It's an eggplant base with potatoes and cheese, and it's got some lentils and tomatoes in it for a little bit of, you know, to replace the meat, because when you don't have meat in something like that, you want a little bit of legume protein. Yeah, exactly. And then it's got just some wonderful spices in it. I highly recommend it. It's a little bit labor intensive, but it's a really delicious dish. It's totally worth
it. That sounds good, and you could probably make that dish in advance.
Oh yeah, it's very easy to make in advance, and then you can just pop it in the oven before you serve it to brown the top.
Mm.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
We may have to try that. So anyone can go on the website. It's called the Shiksa, shiksa.com, and explain to the audience who might not understand where this came from.
Oh, sure. Well, a Shiksa is somebody who was not born Jewish, and I was not born Jewish, obviously, but I became Jewish, and so I've kept the nickname. The nickname kind of stuck. I used to cook Passover for about 50 people every year, and they used to call me the Shiksa in the kitchen before I converted. So
That's so funny.
I converted, the nickname stuck. What could I do?
Now, was it a big adjustment for you?
To convert?
Yeah.
Actually, actually, I had been studying Judaism since college.
How interesting.
Yeah, I'd really been drawn to it. So it was not a huge change for me, but I do have to say I definitely felt different after I converted and did the mikveh. It was just a big spiritual, you know, shift for me inside, and I've never felt happier in my life.
And, Tori, did you find the food culture very different or just like holidays?
Oh, very different. I mean, when I was first introduced to it was a little bit shocking to me. I grew up on very American foods.
Right, so probably much simpler.
Yeah, very simple. So to be suddenly exposed to particularly the Sephardic Jewish recipes from the Mediterranean and Middle East, aren't they great?
I love them. Stuffed everything.
And yeah. Oh, it's so good. I mean, what kind of Jewish foods did you grow up on, Joan?
And not Sephardic, but I had a very close friend who is from Syria. And, oh, my gosh, all of us, children included, would celebrate many holidays with the Bijou family. And who can resist?
Oh, I know.
You know, everything so delicious. The little cigars, my husband would call them, all the phyllo stuff with meat.
Oh, yeah, the Moroccan cigars and things.
Yeah, delicious. Yeah. Our tradition was, you know, pot roast was like a lot of people of that generation. Friday night, my mom would make a rib roast, a turkey as a snack for the weekends. I can't even tell you. It was so food intensive, but we had a huge family and a grandfather who lived with us. So there was constant company.
Oh, I love that.
A lot of feeding went on.
I think that that's part of why I think I'm so drawn to this cuisine and why I write the blog is because, you know, food is family and home. And so I like to have, like you said, the house full of food all the time.
Just right, full of food and full of people.
Yeah, it's the best feeling to me.
Well, all the best to you, Tori. Happy holiday, Tori Avey. The Shiks are in the kitchen. Go online. We found lots of wonderful recipes. More after this. John Hamburg with you and Chris Matthews coming up in just a bit. Very interesting topic. If you've just joined me, I talked to you earlier about the play that I went to see this weekend, Seminar, with Alan Rickman, who plays this feisty tyrant novelist professor who is conducting a private writer's workshop in a lovely rent-controlled apartment and conducting it with a group of four students. Seemed pretty talented. And it's, you know, it's interesting. When you go to theater, you suspend your belief system. Because if you look and analyze everything, you're going to think, this couldn't really happen. I was so happy to be there. We got the biggest kick out of it. It's a small 90-minute play that was entirely enjoyable. It gave me a lot of pleasure to be there with a great cast. So you're always asking me what to see. I think this may do it. And then, Natalie, we went to Sardi's for lunch, and they all asked about you. I was very happy to see that Sardi's was very busy Saturday. You know, restaurants in that neighborhood depend on theater to a certain extent, with the exception of Orso and Joe Allen's. You know, restaurants that get that crowd anyway. The New York Times provides a big market for a lot of those restaurants. It's in that neighborhood. But Sardi's was really busy, and we had a yummy lunch. The food is very nice. My husband thought it was delicious. Oh, you know what he had? He loves, really, he's not of the health food school. He had Sardi's spinach cannelloni, which he thought was really delicious. I'm sure it was. I was very judicious. I had the appetizer crab cake. but I don't like to eat too much before I go to theater. It was excellent. So, and it was happy. It was busy and booming, and people were going off to theater and having family celebrations. Very, very nice. So enjoy that. And those of you who have been calling, I mentioned for buying books or starting as a baby gift, a little library or special books for people who love books, just the right book. And it's a great book service, justtherightbook.com. And no matter what it is, you can get a series of books. You describe the person, have it sent four times a year, or you can get hardcover paperback sent every month to someone. It's a great gift. And if someone like my brother loves thrillers, I love thrillers too. That's my recreation reading. And they would do that three times a year, four times a year, every month. It's a great gift. And a lot of people don't even think about it. So ask for Elizabeth or Beth or Kira or Roxanne. And this is from Madison, a beautiful town, Connecticut, but they do it all online or by mail. 768 Boston Post Road. It's a lovely place to know about. And I am all in favor of bookstores. I'm a big believer of that. And, you know, it's a great gift for people because they choose perfect books dependent upon people's tastes. Like I would tell them my brother, whom he loves, and every month or for 3 months, he would get the perfect thriller or romantic novel or biography, whatever, or mix and match. I actually got that as a gift a year or two ago, and I adored it. You know, I do like I love Chris Matthews' book. You're going to meet Chris in just a minute. But I love fiction. I do. I can't resist. So I got fabulous fiction. Like before everyone else knew about it, I got those books. It's a great service. And you know what else? I buy from Quality House Wines. Bake custom gifts. Gary knows more about wine than almost anyone I know. You can go on to qualityhousewines.com at 212-532-2944. Ask for Gary. You can send, like I was going to send a sparkling wine that I send a lot. And he said, no, no, no. That's a nice wine, but I have better for less money. And he picked out this gorgeous sparkling wine or a rosé, or you can get a beautiful two-bottle gift for $50 or even less. So a lot of good things from this place. And, you know, everyone's scrambling for the last minute. In fact, I want to have Gary come over. I have more champagne in my house that I have never used. And someone told me champagne that goes back, you know, with a good date on it is like good forever. It just gets better and better. But sort of very inexpensive champagne has to be used right away. So we've got to figure that out. But I love talking about this, and I love buying gifts for people for Hanukkah, for whatever holidays. All right, we are going to take a break, and then the one and only Chris Matthews. Looking forward to it. 1-800-321-8828. I also look forward to talking to you. Stay tuned. Here, and I spent it's a beautiful weekend, but a lot of time finishing Chris Matthews' book, Jack Kennedy, Elusive Hero. It was a fascinating picture and very different from what any of us, or at least me, what I expected. And whether it was about his rise to power, Chris paints a very different picture of a young man who did not have an easy childhood, who was in many instances isolated, ill, painfully thin, and had to deceive everyone about what was really wrong with him. He himself didn't know until later. But what was he really like? Fantastic. And the book takes you through really, not only Jack Kennedy, but Jackie and the family about Bobby Kennedy. Congratulations, Chris.
Well, Joan, thank you. Obviously, you're a great reader.
No, it was, you know, it's a great book. Chris, by the way, is the host of MSNBC's Hardball, NBC's The Chris Matthews Show. He's written many books. And you really did a good job. And I have to tell you, there was one scene, and I wonder if guys reacted to it the way I did, when you're describing his first win. And Ben Bradley noticed that Jackie was there, and she was totally ignored by her husband. This was actually before she became, you know, probably one of the most popular women in the world, Jackie Kennedy. But you describe her standing on a staircase as JFK was making a victory speech. And it was televised, it was on the radio, and everyone was screaming and yelling and hugging. And she sort of disappeared and sat by herself in the car. It was a fascinating image.
Yeah, I think that's the disturbing part of the story, and perhaps the difficult part to accept if you see a hero, as I do, and I think anyone who reads this story of how he came up from all that sickness and loneliness and to save his crew in World War II and to save us later on in the Cuban Missile Crisis, really to save the planet, I believe, from nuclear war. And yet he had this distance from his own wife where he could be cruel and not only passively cruel, almost actively cruel, in the sense that he would expose her to not only being left away and left apart, but he would bring that sort of coldness right to her. For example, when she lost a child in 56, staying away on a vacation was basically chasing girls in the south of France, and she knew it, and he never came back when she was suffering through that miscarriage. So there's a number of incidents like that where you just go, boy, this guy could be cold.
Well, but you also point out the guy was born with a lot of charm and a lot of confidence, despite the fact, as Jackie, trying to explain him in your book, says his mother never loved him, you know, and gives all kinds of excuses for what he was, both good and bad. But you point out that he had this, call it a gift, if you will, this ability to separate himself from emotions of anyone around him, including friends that he made when he was at boarding school.
Yeah, here's, imagine knowing somebody and being incredibly attracted to them because they're interesting, because they're handsome, and all the other things, superficial and internal. Jackie seemed to have been very attracted to his internal qualities, his hero worship. Imagine if you could, people described in the book, I mean, I put together what they described, how he would be in a room, whether it's at his wedding or at a cabin meeting, and being completely aware of everyone around him, what their motives were, what they're up to, if you will. And at the same time, not being moved by those emotions. In other words, if there's somebody sitting right next to him, including his spouse, who was very concerned or very emotionally upset at something he'd just done, he would understand how upset they were, but he would not be moved by it. And that would include Jackie Kennedy, and later on would include General Curtis LeMay, who wanted to bomb Cuba. He could be just as unmoved by the passions of someone he's married to, and potentially, and he was in fact in love with, and be just as tough and warding off the emotional influences of these right-wing generals. I mean, it's one of those things like in literature where Norman Mailer used to write about this, where the same qualities are good in some circumstances and frightening in others.
Right. But part of it was, as you explained, I don't think any of us had the understanding of the pain that from the time he was a child, he was in serious pain almost every single day of his life. And,
yeah,
and he went everywhere, but he had enormous crises everywhere.
Well, imagine being alone in boarding school. First of all, it's a very British kind of thing, old money thing, I guess. You send the kid away to school, and then you find out that he has potentially leukemia, and he knows it. He's hearing about the test. They're turning him upside down, looking inside him. These doctors keep saying how interesting a case he is, and he sort of chuckles in that and says, I think it'd be interesting, too, if it wasn't me. And then his mother never comes and sees him, even though he's threatened with leukemia, which was a life-ending disease in those days. Certainly, it still is an incredibly frightening disease. And later on in life, he would always, Jackie sort of tried to figure him out, his coldness that way, by saying, I guess his mother never loved him. His mother never loved him. And maybe that was a Freudian attempt to try to figure out why he chased other women, you know?
Yeah, who can explain this? It was also the way they grew up. But fascinating, the relationship between Jack and Bobby, two totally different people,
yeah.
And how Bobby, he was very close to his older brother and sister, but not to Bobby, who was considerably younger. And it was only when his father sort of pushed Bobby on him that he began to understand how important Bobby was and would be in his life.
Yeah, that great moment in the Southwest, or out of the far East in 1951, they're on a trip together. And as you say, the old man, Joe Sr., says, you got to take Bobby along. It's going to be part of his training. He had a freelance job stringing for the Boston Post, I think it was, one of the papers Joe Sr. basically controlled. And Jack didn't want to bring him along because the younger brother was kind of a stiff. He was kind of churchy and puritanical, and Jack couldn't stand having that around him. But it ended up Jack had his second episode of Addison's disease over there in the Far East. In Japan, he had a 106-degree temperature. He was really at death's door. They had the second rites for him the second time in his life. And Bobby was the one that got him to a military base hospital in Okinawa and saved his life. And after that, Jack began to look at him as his protector, not just a Puritan, but his protector.
And during the course of his life, when you understand how brief that life was, the lessons that he learned from victories and he learned from defeats. And the Bay of Pigs was a huge lesson.
He learned in the Bay of Pigs that although he was president of the United States, he wasn't in control of the people around him. The CIA was doing its own thing. The military wasn't helpful to him. The CIA had a plan to land those exiles, the 1,500 exiles on the beach in the Bay of Pigs. And they also had a commitment they'd made to those exiles that if they got in trouble on the beach, the United States military would take over the fight for them. They never told that to Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy had no idea that commitment had been made. And at that critical moment, they said, okay, they're in trouble on the beach. We got to go in. He said, I never committed myself to a war with the Soviets in Cuba. You guys pulled a nice trick here, but I'm not following through. I think that was his great courageous moment. And from then on, he fired the head of the CIA, the number two guy at the CIA. He began to realize he had to take on the military like LeMay and the rest of them. And he didn't let himself be pushed around anymore. And so it was a very, very costly, very costly experience. But Jack became president, I think, that day.
And the description of this man who became president is the story of a boy because of what had happened to him in his youth, became obsessed with reading and history, and he understood about politics from the time he was a kid, and he also understood how he couldn't really deal with his father, and yet Bobby, who was, you know, knew how to deal with the father because he wanted to please him, he let all that go.
Yeah, I think it's a great story. Jackie understood him despite their distance, and it's interesting, they were both kind of distant people. Faye is the word Jack used to describe her when he said that her best quality is her distance from life, even. She understood something from that first interview after he was killed in Dallas. She said, he was not this, don't think of him as this handsome, hell-fell, well-met, charming guy. Think of him as the young boy, sick in bed, all alone with his heroes, like King Arthur and Winston Churchill's book on Marlborough, his great ancestor. And she really had him figured as a young hero worshiper, a young kid who loved heroes like King Arthur, and he loved Winston Churchill later on. And imagine this kid, he's 14 years old, and he read the entire history of World War I by Winston Churchill. He read the New York Times every day in school. He was a young kid who wanted to understand greatness, and I think he wanted to become great, and in a very hero-worshipping kind of way. And Jackie loved that young kid. I think that's what she hung on to through all the difficulties and the distance and the death and even the death, that was the person that she loved, that young boy.
Right, and that young boy, as he emerged and became a national hero, is an unbelievable story, and Chris Matthews is a great storyteller. Chris, host of MSNBC's Hardball, The Chris Matthews Show's on NBC, many books, and, of course, his latest, Jack Kennedy, Elusive Hero. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more. I'm Joan Hamburg. Stay tuned. Chris Matthews' latest book, Jack Kennedy, Elusive Hero, should be required reading for every politician. It's not only the story of Jack's rise to national prominence, the kind of courage he showed, and how he learned, he was only a kid, but how he learned to fight his political battles. the old-fashioned way. And I was thinking, you know, as I finished your book over the weekend, Chris, and of course, I wonder what he would have done or would be doing in Korea at this point. We have a very different kind of president this go round.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, and it's always, that country's probably the most isolated country on the planet. We really don't know the kind of almost religious zeal with which these people treated their leaders, the last two, the one who just died and his father. And to watch those people this morning on TV in anguish and tears, drenched in tears, their emotional commitment to almost a godlike figure. And who's going to replace them, and are they going to become more dangerous or less dangerous? I mean, this is a country that has to be watched because they have nuclear weapons.
Right, and the sun. Do you know anything about the sun?
No.
Except what we've all seen, little glimpses?
Well, he can't be any stranger than his father. I mean, the father would drink Jack Daniels, and he would have girlfriends brought in, and they kind of a strange childlike, almost like Idi Amin, one of these childlike leaders who have power because of whether they took it in a coup or they got it from their father, but they seem like children, and they're pandered to, and people talk to I always thought it was funny that he had that strange hairdo, the man who just died, and I always wondered, people probably said, well, you have great hair today, your fearless leader, our dear leader. I imagine no one dared speak ill of him. It's a strange world where your ego is just played to 24/7.
Right, and that's all a lot of those people knew, and certainly their children. It was their entire world and their entire system. They don't know what else.
I think we have to count on China to exercise sober, long-term leadership here over that region, that country. That is the only ally the communists have, really, and hope that the Chinese are some kind of anchor through this. They must be watching it. They're very concerned. They don't want that whole North Asia area to go nuclear. They don't want Japan to feel they have to go nuclear, and they don't want to cause trouble. So they don't want the North Koreans to cause trouble. They seem to be. The Chinese have to be watched as a rival, but I think they are a stabilizing influence there.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. But another fascinating time and a very difficult time, because unlike places we're seeing in the Middle East where they have tasted what they call democracy, this seems to have eluded this part of Korea.
Yeah, and I think they must be probably totally shut out from what's happened in South Korea, that booming economy, a relatively free country, in fact, a free democracy. And what do they know about what life is like among their common Korean people, that they do accept as common Korean nationals? And what do they know about the South and how well it has bloomed? And do they want to be part of that? You know, do they want to share in that success, or do the new leaders want to continue to shroud their people from that knowledge?
It's all remains to be seen.
True enough.
Chris, you did a really good job. Just before I let you go, tell me what's happening in your life, beside the obvious.
Well,
the TV shows, the books.
Book tour, and I've had the greatest time. My wife has put up with it. Kathy's put up with it. And I'm coming home today. I've actually taken 3 days off from Hardball. I'll be back on Thursday and Friday. I'm bringing Kathy on the show Thursday because people keep asking me, when's Kathy coming on? My boy has got a job as an actor in HBO, the new Aaron Sorkin
You're
TV
kidding.
Show. Yeah, Thomas has a part in that, along with Jane Fonda,
him.
Jeff Daniels, and Sam Waterston. The kid, whatever happens in the rest of his life, would probably never be as thrilled as to go to work in the morning and see Jane Fonda as a fellow worker, Sam Waterston or Jeff Daniels. It's just he's so happy.
Of course he's happy. He's just a kid. He just got out of school.
I would say
this kid is on the fast track already.
Look, as long as he's on the track, Joan, it's the track that matters. Can he stay working? And it's just a thrill.
You know what? He's once you start like he's starting, he's like his daddy and mom. He's going to be right there.
Well,
happy holiday
so happy
to
holidays to you, Joan. You're a treat to be on with. Thank you.
You
so
and your
you're
family.
A great reader. My God, you understand this book better than anybody I've talked to. Thank you so much.
Chris Matthews, Jack Kennedy, elusive hero. I'm Joan Hamburg. You're listening to WOR. Welcome, everyone. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed it. I love it. It's not that often that we get to talk to Chris Matthews because he is in Washington and very busy traveling everywhere. So it is a treat. Okay, so we've been throwing everything in this little mix match that we're doing, from interesting interviews to thoughts for holidays. And one of the presents that I give every year to my son and daughter-in-law, whether it's Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Christmas, is VitalChoice.com, the wild seafood and organic. I have to tell you, that canned salmon. Now, I know they have a lot of fresh salmon, and kids, people love it. They have a wild salmon sampler. They have just a seafood medley, an Asian sushi ensemble. But we cannot resist the canned salmon. It is so delicious there. Really delicious. So what you can do, and it's natural, it has nothing in it. Even the tuna, I'm very neurotic about tuna. I'll eat their tuna. It is not filled with mercury. Go on, it's one of the best. Go on to Vital, V-I-T-A-L, choice.com. VitalChoice.com. And treat yourself, or send it to someone who you love. It's a great gift. I mean, my kids like the sardines. I only like skinless and boneless sardines, but they love their sardines. And I've ordered shrimp from them. They are so delicious because they're live shrimp that they freeze. And you can't believe how sweet they are. I remember Natalie had those, too. We love them. Remember the Vital Choice shrimp? They were like candy. So your little girl said they were like candy. And we haven't done that in a while. We used to have that for lunch at least three times a week. We have to reorder that for the holidays. Just delicious. Something I really love. And speaking of the holidays, you know that if you are at a party or at home at any time this time of year, and they're serving eggnog, forget about it. Have a Pinot Noir, and you will save yourself 345 calories. That's a lot. That's a little glass of eggnog is pushing 400 calories. And I have to tell you, the dip, if they have crudités out, or you're doing this at home, eat them. Eat any of the Mediterranean things, the tzatziki, everything. In fact, we had a wonderful Friday night. We went out with our friends Avery Corman and Carol. We went to a lovely little restaurant on Lexington Avenue called Periella and had delicious mezze, a vegetarian mezze. It was supposed to be for one. I think it was $14, and four of us shared it. It was just delicious. But if you pass the dips, except for those dips, many of them are made with yogurt, you are saving at least 100 calories. I love hearing this. But, you know, I was somewhere and they had these holiday cookies, the butter ones with the nice little frosting on it. And of course I wanted another one. If you stick to one, you're saving 111 calories. And if you go for a candy cane instead of M&Ms, you've saved 85 calories. I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a lot. It's a lot to do that. And chocolate-covered strawberries, you can have two of them, as opposed to a piece of chocolate cake. You know how sometimes people do buffet tables on the holidays? You will save 246 calories. And chocolate-covered strawberries are good. So if you're full and you're about to leave, and there's a table full of sweets, just pass it and say goodbye. And have a little fizzy water with lemon or lime instead of ginger ale. But, you know, here's interesting. Three little mini Franks, if you pass them up, or you pass up your spinach and cheese quiche, that's almost 200 calories. And I love hors d'oeuvres. I like picky food. So it makes me happy. I think that's why I love the food court at the Plaza so much. So good. Because you can have little picky things, you know. And I couldn't believe how many calories sliders are. They are absolutely too much. And do not eat cookie dough when you're baking. Not only is there a risk of getting some big foodborne deal, but they're full of calories. 339 calories if you take 1 to 3 tastes of cookie dough. That's a lot. And, you know, we could all do this. We could have over 1,000-something calories in a day, extra calories, by just picking at stuff. Not good. You know, my stove broke. My favorite. I have a little GE wall oven that I love. And I have a regular oven. But that wall oven has been so faithful and so good. It broke. It stopped keeping time. Of course it broke, right in time for the holidays. But I noticed that because the wall oven broke and I used that oven, I didn't cook a lot. Usually, if I'm home on a Sunday afternoon, I'm going to be in there baking, cooking, roasting. I didn't do that. And that saves you a lot of calories. So get out of the kitchen, except something you have to. We've all been trying to figure out what we want for holiday food. And I know my darling husband already asked me about potato pancakes. Or am I going to make them this year? And I just might. I don't like them when you buy them. They're not as good. Although, what is our client's name, Linda, on Long Island, Port Washington? Culinary Architect makes really nice little potato pancakes. They're on Long Island, somewhere near Port Washington. They're in Greenboro, wasn't it? I don't remember where they are, but they're good. And they make little crispy ones, which are worth having. Thank you so much for these 2 hours. Lou Dobbs is waiting for you. Enjoy. Until tomorrow, I'm Joan Hamburg.
This has been a podcast from WOR.